He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello today to our listeners to Car Keys with Mike, Jay, and Robin. I'd like to start off the show today with discussing what is soon to come, well, soon is relative in the time frame world, a GM dealership near us, which has to do with the next generation Bolt. This show has talked about the Bolt off and on for a number of years. Jay and I both thought it was very good back when I first came out, and it has disappeared for a couple of years, and Chevrolet has been rumored to be bringing it back. The rumor has risen and fallen, but the rumor is apparently true, and I have an article in front of me to give the listeners a few salient details about the coming 2027. That's the year it's going to be labeled as, even though it's going to show up in maybe late 25, very late, as you get into 26. It's going to have all the latest battery technology that GM has been working on over the last several months and years as battery development evolves in the electric car world. It's going to be a less expensive battery than the earlier ones. The Bolt itself is expected to cost around $30,000, and that is going to include an estimated range of nearly 300 miles. That may be front-wheel drive only or two-wheel drive only. I'm not sure about the drivetrain. Jay may be able to chime in when I let him. But it's going to, I'm looking at a picture of it in a very sort of emerald-looking blue with a black roof. It looks similar to the current last generation that is now only available in used forms, I believe, and any dealerships that have one or two or more available to sell in the 20,000, mid-20s range, I believe, depending on the mileage and all that. Jay, you should be excited by this because you at one point thought you might own one.
Well, and I may still. I think I said it briefly last week, if I recall, or if I didn't, I meant to. You can find freshly used Chevy Bolts for really very reasonable money, like in, under $20,000 for a car with less than 20,000 miles or thereabout. So I am moderately excited, sure. I think it's a great proposition. I think it's a great around-town car. I mean, we've talked about it a number of times. I looked at the specs really quickly on the new one, and can't find much information other than what you just said, and you know, more range than it used to, and you know that's a trend, of course, in the EV world in general. So yeah, it's good for GM. I think GM needs more electric vehicles, and we will be happy to test it when it comes out.
Exactly. The article, which I have in front of me, says part of the enthusiasm from GM's end is for bringing the Bolt back to life and for us is that their Equinox EV is basically selling very well.
Let me say this, because I think this new Bolt will be built, and I'm not 100% sure, but I'm reading this very quickly. I think it will be built on the same platform as the current lineup of small or mid-size.
You are correct. I'm looking at a similar article, if not the same article you
platform,
are.
I think it's called, I'm not quite sure, but it's the platform that underpins both the Equinox and the Chevy Blazer, and of course also the Honda Prologue and the Cadillac Lyriq. So this platform is going to be used, I guess, across the board, and that's what all the manufacturers do.
Yeah.
Remember what we said last week about the Rivian platform for the R2 is also going to be the platform that Volkswagen is going to base all of their future vehicle EVs on. So that's what manufacturers do. They develop a platform that can be used across the board, same platform, multiple vehicles.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go into the technical aspects of it. some of which are going to allow it to be more affordably priced initially if they hold it at $30,000 range, whether that is appropriately including basic things above the base model, we won't know. But the Bolt is going to be, as you say, I think, a very ideal for a commuter car around town, anywhere that anybody wants to use an electric vehicle at less than 250 to 300 miles on a daily basis, and has the charging platform near them to keep it charged up for that kind of use.
At the other end of the spectrum, I was I had the pleasure of test driving a Mercedes EQS, which is Mercedes' biggest and most luxurious electric SUV. So the EQS Mercedes is based, or is the equivalent of the Mercedes S-Class and GLS class. Both the sedan and the SUV bear the same name, simply EQS. And it's been around for a while, and I think I've noted that in previous shows that you could buy them for really, substantially less money than a new one if you went with like a 2023 and you could find one for $50,000, $60,000 as opposed to $110,000 or $120,000. Again, totally opposite end of the spectrum. Not a Chevy Bolt by any stretch of imagination. So anyway, I test drove this EQS, and I did about 50 miles on secondary roads in our area on the Connecticut-New York border. And it was a base model, EQS 450, all-wheel drive, what Mercedes calls the 4MATIC. And I don't remember, or don't off the top of my head, what the horsepower output is, but I think it's in the high 300s or around 400 horsepower. Moral of the story is it's plenty fast enough. This car will go up to 60 or 80 miles an hour in just a few ticks, and very smoothly. It's probably the quietest car I have ever driven. It does everything well. It's comfortable. It's fast. And Mercedes is actually offering some interesting lease deals on it, where on this $110,000 base price, I think they just have what they call a dealer cash contribution of around $10,000, and lease payments for 3 years are right around $900 or just under $1,000 a month. It's still a lot of money, but it's a lot of car for the money.
Well, I think we have to look at the relative situation of car costs new, and as the EQ is at what, the $100,000 range new.
Correct.
Okay, so $900 a month. Yes, it's certainly an expensive monthly output for anybody who doesn't have the income capacity to handle it with ease. So, Mercedes has got such a good reputation, as does Audi and as does BMW, that when you go buy their vehicles at the levels matching the Mercedes vehicle you're talking about, everybody's got to have that kind of income to afford a lease and or a purchase financing thing for level for those cars. The Bolt, of course, if it comes in at $30,000, it's going to be more affordable. And it'll do many of the things the EQ does with lesser speed and glamour. But we all buy the cars we can afford and that we want to buy when we buy them and or lease them instead. But leasing, as you know, Jay, and you're alluding to in this, who knows what it would cost to finance, have finance payments if anybody did finance the Mercedes level, new car level pricing, as opposed to paying cash.
So the lease deal, I dug into it a little bit, and it basically is, it's kind of standard for a lease. So it's a 3-year lease with the option to buy the car at the end of the lease for, I think, $48,000. Again, that's based on the $110,000 price new minus the $10,000 cash contribution from the dealer.
Yeah.
So basically, it's just under a $100,000 car. And after 3 years, they're offering the car for purchase at $48,000, which is kind of on the normal side, you know, percentage-wise, and or pay the 25 cents a mile extra over 30,000 miles.
Right.
That you get included. So, it, you know, is at least, again, it's a lease deal. I don't know if they offer the same cash deal if you're buying the car cash, that $10,000 off the list price. And I wouldn't be surprised that they do if they did. I'm actually pretty sure they do. Not 100%, but we know Mercedes is struggling to sell that car. And also, what's interesting, it is the end of the line for the EQS. So it's only been around for 3 or 4 years. But the next generation of electric vehicles at Mercedes are going to be based on platforms that will be used both for electric vehicles and internal combustion, both for electric vehicles, and power plants, and ICE, internal combustion engines. So there, European manufacturers like Mercedes and BMW are finding that differentiating electric cars from the regular engine-powered cars is just not working marketing-wise. So they're going to just use the same platforms.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Tesla for a moment. They have redesigned the Model Y, and it's got the picture I'm looking at has a, as they call it, a front lighting version similar to the truck. Apparently, Tesla is not doing very well in China. Jay, I don't know whether it's because the Chinese electric vehicle development is outpacing everybody else in the world, and plus they probably are assembled at a much lower cost factor. Where do you see Tesla going in this electric world? Because Tesla was the first real electric vehicle to make the electric vehicle market a realistic market alternative to fossil fuel cars, and has generally been selling well up until maybe recent months to everybody because they know what they're doing. The car is, you have driven a few, I have driven one, and it is a very, it's been a very attractive car in my mind, and a very good, reliable car in general. Used by taxi services around the U.S., not to mention probably the world, for months now or years.
So I think, and we've talked about this too, but I think Tesla's problems are, twofold, or at least, you know, part of the problem is the age of the, you know, the models are getting old and are either being only slightly revamped. Or in the case of the Model Y, yes, they've done a more thorough update of the design of the car. But it is looking like a Cybertruck, and the Cybertruck cues are not necessarily a
positive
influence these
days.
The Model S, interestingly, which is the oldest model, has just been revamped too, and it looks very much the same. And from a design perspective, outside design of the car, I think the Model S is the car that has aged the best.
I agree.
It still looks contemporary, and in fact, I've touched it very little on the outside. The inside seems to have been more extensively redesigned, and it looks good. And you know, they've extended the range, so there are changes, technological changes being made to Teslas, but they kind of have slow. They've been caught up by other manufacturers. I think in China, you've got companies like Build Your Dream are coming out with absolutely fantastic products that are giving Tesla a run for their money. And so that's part of the problem. And the other problem, as we know, is you know, the Elon factor and
the image. Yes, I don't want to delve too much into that, but you are correct. That has affected the global sales. Not to mention the U.S. sales in the recent quarters of when sales are data is brought out in many levels.
So, you know, speaking of purely or new manufacturers like Tesla, well, Tesla has now been around for a little a dozen years or so.
Yes, that's
but
correct.
Companies like Rivian and Lucid, it'll be interesting to see how they survive. I mean, we know of a few that have gone belly up just as they were, you know, coming about. You know, companies like Fisker came out with this product, and I've mentioned it. You go to New York, and you'll see dozens of Ocean Fiskers, and it's a really good looking vehicle.
But they didn't make it.
It's dead on arrival. I mean, it came out last year or the year before, and the company went belly up, and now you have these. I think mostly you can see the TC plates on the cars, so they're mostly Uber and Lyft drivers who have bought into Fisker, and hopefully the car doesn't have too many issues because
there
won't be anybody to take care of them, going forward. Companies like Lucid and Rivian, I think Rivian is around to stay. They've scaled production enough. They have models coming out that are going, more affordable models like the R2 and the R3 are coming out in the next 3 or 4 years. So I think Rivian is on a good path. Lucid is more questionable. I mean, it's a great product, probably the most technologically advanced EV out there. And they're coming out with their first SUV, which I think will do a lot to increase their sales. I mean, I think they're going to quadruple their sales easily just with this SUV coming out at the end of the year.
I have not seen that picture pictorially or in any other form yet. I questioned Lucid because what is their starting price and what is their top price of their vehicles? You drove one recently and reported it on this show not too long ago.
$75,000 and up.
Yeah.
Again, high end. But you know, it's like every manufacturer comes out, if they're coming out with new product, you start out with expensive high end product, and then as
well, that's where the profits
volume,
are.
You can bring the prices down, and you can put out more affordable models.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see. I hope you stick around.
I'd like to move on to talk about what I have been noticing on the highways and byways. You know, cars are mostly trucked to dealers. They start out maybe on trains, getting from one part of the country to the next, and then they get put on truck trailers to be delivered to the dealerships. But I've noticed in recent weeks there have been a lot of trailers combing the roads, Interstate 95 in Connecticut, for example, where I've been on quite a bit, and 684 and 84 in New York State, where I've been on quite a bit. But what I've noticed about them, because I'm always trying to look, and of course that's a dangerous thing to do when you're driving, because we talk about staying focused on the road, and that doesn't mean staying focused on the other vehicles on the road. It means staying focused on the vehicle you're driving, part of it. But I try to look at these trailers to get. You used to be able to, and maybe it's still exclusively the Porsche Audi group that covers their cars in Tyvek type of wraps, so that you know what those cars are if you see a trailer full of Tyvek wrapped cars coming down the road. But the unwrapped cars are more difficult to get a fix on when you're moving the opposite direction of a trailer coming to you, probably down the road at 60 or 70 miles an hour, and you're doing the same going by it. But I've noticed, what I do notice is that when these trailers are full of mixed vehicle cars, they may not be new vehicles. In many cases, they may be used vehicles being moved from one area of our country to another to be sold, not where they originally may have had their first lives as owned cars, but where they're going to go for their next lives. And Jay, we talked briefly about it before the show, and you said maybe it's because they can sell different lines of these vehicles at different price levels, depending on the area of the country that they're being dragged to from.
Well, I think there's also the fact that, you know, we if you're in a used car market, you want to buy a car that's lived in the southern states, out of the salt. I mean, the last thing you want to buy is a car that's spent you know, 5 years in Vermont or upstate New York, because those things are rust buckets before, you know, in just.
So that's a very good point to discuss. You are at the Northeast and the Northwest and all the northern parts of our country where there are a lot of winter type seasonal weather conditions. And when you have precipitation mixed with that, which is between, you know, snow, the roads are littered with salt, and or layered with salt, I should say, or other snow-melting chemicals. And they get, we've talked about this one, suggesting that people around here should get their underbodies watched on a regular basis during the wintertime. Those wheels that drive over these chemical compounds are very good at throwing them all up into the underbodies of the cars, where they can get wedged between the hoses and the connection points in the cars, at which point they start to rust. And I must say that I think I have one of my Cherokees is probably going to be prone to that particular situation because it came from Michigan. And I think Michigan is probably in the snow belt and in the salt belt and everything else. And I have recently had some strange noises in my braking system, and I took it into the dealer to see what was causing it, and he brought me out into the service bay during the course of their inspection of it and showed me a considerable amount of area underneath the body, which is showing rust, infection.
Get rid of it.
Well, that's something you think about. Get rid of it before it becomes uselessly valueless.
Hey, you should be all excited with a new Jeep, the Cherokee, coming out. Have you seen the pictures?
I have. I haven't actually seen enough of it yet to get really excited about it. But if it's not a whole lot bigger than what I have been driving, I might be interested. But if it's enlarged the way they tend to do when they bring out new models of some of the vehicles that I have thought were very good at their original size and configuration, I become less interested in them as a potentially owned item in my fleet of vehicles.
So it looks larger, for
it
sure.
Does look
it's a
larger,
little boxier.
Yeah.
You know, they want it to look a little more trucky. Mechanically, we don't know much other than there'll be a hybrid version of it, but we don't know anything about
the other engine choices you're going to have.
Engines,
yeah.
and transmission and all.
Right.
But it's coming when? End of 2025, something like that? I mean, it's soon,
late 25, early 26. I don't know when the production's starting. I think late 25. But the word you just used, boxier, yeah, I've noted that several lines of vehicles have become boxier in their latest iterations. Hyundai's Santa Fe, I believe, is very boxy.
Santa Fe is a total departure from the previous design.
Yes, it is indeed. And I believe the Toyota Land Cruiser has retained its boxiness in its enlarged state.
So here's something I wanted to talk about, and we brushed upon the subject maybe last week. And looking at Toyota and Jeep and their future, and you know, Jeep's future, Land Rover, and my what I'm trying to get at is, I think these companies are trying to increase their sales by building SUVs on car platforms or unibody platforms.
Toyota isn't, though, I don't believe.
Well, that's my point.
Okay.
Jeep is, Land Rover is, like the new Defender that's been out for 5 years now, is a car-based platform. When I say car-based, it's a unibody. It's not a body-on-frame. It's not.
Well, what do they have as cars? I mean, you talk about Land Rover. It's Range Rover is the big lineup. Do you consider those cars? As
well, I'm calling them cars because they're and I'm correcting myself right now, is saying that they're unibody platforms. So they're not body on frames like trucks, like pickup trucks, or like Jeep Wranglers, or like Ford Broncos, or like Toyota Land Cruisers. And I think Toyota is being very smart, and I think their latest Land Cruiser is not only extremely good looking, they made it a little smaller than it used to be. It's just the right size. I think they got rid of the third row seating, and that
option.
You know,
yeah,
might seem like a gamble. But the vehicle looks great, but it's also truck based, and I've seen it on the New York City roads, and the vehicle does wobble like trucks do.
Over bumps?
But I guess my bigger question is, isn't companies like or brands like Jeep, aren't they kind of losing their mojo, if I may say, by you know, not having, other than the Jeep Wrangler.
The Wrangler is staying true to itself. Right?
Hmm?
The Wrangler is not changing. It is true to itself as being a very rugged, off-road capable vehicle.
Yeah, but it's also grown. If you compare Wrangler from now and one 20 years ago, it's a totally different size of vehicle.
Well, they all those vehicles, yes, you are correct. They've gotten wider in their stance of the drive systems, probably to be more stable and safer in less stable road conditions or land conditions they might go over. You know, if you look at a Wrangler from last century, they are much narrower. They are shorter. As you noted, they've gotten bigger as well. But they have retained their body-on-frame structure through and through, as far as that goes. And the Broncos are the same way. But I guess the Range Rovers have gone to a less rugged stature from the standpoint of the underpinnings. Yet you still see the advertisements as if they could do everything that the old Land Rovers could do in the ads. Not that anybody's ever going to put them through that kind of test.
I guess the point I was trying to make, and I probably wasn't very clear, you look at Land Rover with the Defender, it's now a unibody platform. They've opened the door for a brand-new company like Ineos to come out and put on the market this Grenadier that is, in essence, a very modern version of the old Land Rover
right.
Defender. And actually, when Ineos was still in, you know, a project and hadn't started producing vehicles, they went up to Land Rover and said, "Hey, let's do something together." And you know, Land Rover just blew them off.
Yeah, that's correct.
And now, well, you have a Range Rover and the Mini Range Rovers and Land Rover Group's, market share and more, the offerings they have is just shrinking. Day in, day out. You have the Range Rover.
I'd like to digress from maybe your idea of what's going on, it is sort of called the saturation point of any line of vehicles. Is there a point in which there are no longer new generations of buyers coming along that want what the old generations of buyers sought and own?
Yeah, I think
so. Is that happening to the Wrangler a bit? I'm waiting for it to happen to the Bronco. You know, the Bronco is new, 2 years old now, and is still rising in sales, whereas the Wranglers are flat, flattened out, apparently, according to some of the data I've recently seen. And it's not that they aren't great vehicles, but maybe there just aren't new people coming along wanting to buy these vehicles. They are not particularly fuel efficient, not that that makes a difference to the people who buy them, I guess. Either the Broncos fuel efficient, and I don't know, the Toyota Land Cruisers have a mild hybrid drivetrain system to try to improve on their woefully, not anybody else's, inefficiency in the mileage situation as well.
So let me jump into something totally different. Fuel efficiency. All these new vehicles have four-cylinder, 2-liter turbo engines, and they all get pretty good mileage, right?
For them, yes. Over the sixes and
here's
the
what I've noticed, though, and this is not a good thing. Volvo and their XC60 and the V60. I've driven a few, and the fuel mileage is just like 4 or 5 miles per gallon less than an Audi or BMW or Mercedes with the same type of engines. And I cannot explain why.
Right.
But you know, an XC60 will get like 21, 22 miles to the gallon. That's terrible in today's world. And a Volvo V60 wagon will get somewhere around 25, and you know, it should be getting like 30-ish, 28 to 30.
We ought to discuss fuel efficiency a bit more in subsequent shows, listeners, and we probably will. Until that time, we are Car Keys with Jay, Robin, and Mike, and we will be with you in another show in another week or two. Thanks for listening.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.